Cultivating profound healing capabilities and the art and science of Vedic counseling. Welcome to the Vital Veda Show. I'm your host, Dylan Smith. I am an Ayurvedic practitioner and holistic health educator based in Sydney, Australia. But, you know, these days with the globalization all around the globe, with the teaching and consultations and all the things. So we have a really special episode today. It's good to get back into the Ayurveda. You know, although I'm an Ayurvedic practitioner and holistic health educator, primarily my love and my passion, of course, is Ayurveda. And Ayurveda is a Sanskrit word which means the science of life, but it's known as the mother of medicines. And a lot of the guests I interview on this show are, you know, all of the guests are experts in their field and very passionate. In the fields of health, consciousness, spirituality, relationships, and they may have never heard of Ayurveda before. However, because Ayurveda is the mother of medicines, it really is the root of all these other medicinal modalities, and that is because Ayurveda is the laws of nature. So everything, Ayurveda has a say on everything, and everything is sprung from it. So, you know, while a lot of the episodes on this show is getting into, you know, certain aspects of the science of life, even from a Western, you know, modern scientific point of view. But it's really beautiful, and we don't do it a lot, to go really back to the roots and explore the Ayurveda. So this is a big one for the Ayurvedic nerds and the lovers of the Vedic wisdom, that wisdom which holds the laws of nature and shares with us the laws of nature, natural law, as well as especially for practitioners, any practitioners of any health modality, especially Ayurveda, you're going to love with this one, because the man I'm interviewing is Dr. Suhas G. Krishagar, and he's one of the most academically accomplished Ayurvedic physicians in the United States. He's a clinician who has treated over 15,000 clients successfully, and he's a classically trained Ayurvedic physician. He's a Rig Vedic Brahmin by tradition, so this is a type of family lineage he was born into, and we talk about that very much off the front. He's an accomplished clinician who adds tremendous value to his clients and students, and he's an insightful medical astrologer, a Jyotishi, and a Vedic counselor. He's worked with His Holiness Maharishi Mahesh Yogi for over 10 years, where he and his wife, Dr. Manisha, as well as my guru, Dr. Raja, and many, many other teachers, traveled extensively around the world teaching Ayurvedic medicine, Jyotish, designing courses and curriculums, directing Ayurvedic clinics, helping make new Ayurvedic formulations. He was the chairman of the Maharishi College of Vedic Medicine, a professor at Maharishi University of Management in Iowa, as well as the medical director at the Raj Panchakarma Center in Iowa. He's a motivational speaker, presenting Ayurvedic wisdoms with, you know, sharing the stage with Deepak Chopra, Tony Robbins, Wayne Dyer, Dr. Oz, and many other leaders in the field. And he currently leads an Ayurvedic clinic offering Panchakarma diet, lifestyle consultations, Vedic astrology, Vedic counseling, medical dietology, herbal medicine, and teaches Ayurveda in various locations throughout the US. So we talk about Dr. Suhas's journey, particularly we go into his time with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, basically spreading Ayurveda throughout the world, and particularly throughout the West, and then re-enlivening it from the West into, you know, by enlivening it in the West, that's how they re-sparked the kindle of Vedic wisdom within India, by working on the West as well as working with the modern science. So in this episode, we talk about a whole lot of awesome things. Really, it's, again, my passion. I'm just listening to this recording again, I forgot how good it was. We talk about the Rig Vedic Brahman tradition and the source of the Vedas, the four Vedas, and Rig Veda as the seed of all the other Vedas, the Vedic knowledge that is encyclopedic and the oldest Veda. We talk about Dr. Suhas's time with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, practicing Ayurveda in the West. You know, in India they have all these sources, and how do they do it in the West? You know, him living in US for quite some time, combining psycho-emotional response and stress with Vedic astrology. What are the qualities of a Vedya, of an Ayurvedic physician? And this is really helpful for all the, you know, practitioners, health practitioners of all sorts. The art of science of Vedic counseling, the alarming mental health epidemic, and yeah, just developing divine capabilities of healing, and with your hand, with your word, with purity, so many things. We talk about epidemics according to Ayurveda, about COVID, briefly, and so many things. So you guys are going to enjoy this. If you appreciate what you're listening to, please share it. Share it with a friend. Leave a review. That would be really helpful. You know, take a screenshot, share it on Instagram. Tag me as well as Dr. Suhas. So I'm at Vital Veda and Dr. Suhas is Dr. Suhas HI, Dr. Suhashi. And you know, we appreciate the sharing. If you want more knowledge from me, Instagram is where I post the most regularly. But if you want the more detailed knowledge and the updates and the special offers and when I release online courses and things like that, you can sign up to my newsletter on vitalveda.com.au. We've also got a Facebook group, the Vital Veda Community, where we share things with each other and get different opinions and, you know, ask questions. And I'm not the only one to respond. There's other experts in the field that may know more than me in certain areas and that do know more than me in certain areas. So check out those. Become part of the community. Dr. Suhas has a pretty extensive website, ayurvedichealing.net, where you've got online courses, products, as well as a whole bunch of resources, including the three books that Dr. Suhas has written, the bestseller, The Hot Belly Diet, Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life, all about circadian rhythms, and The Art and Science of Vedic Counseling, along with Dr. David Frawley. So we talk about these at the end. Enjoy the show. It's a really good one. Dr. Suhas, you say you're from the Rig Vedic Brahmin tradition. And of course, Rig Veda is one of the Vedas, and it's the Veda which is really the source or the seed of all the other Vedas, and it's the Vedic knowledge that's encyclopedic and really holds the totality of the Vedas, which of course is the laws of nature. So can you explain what it means of being a Rig Vedic Brahmin by tradition?
Out of all the four Vedas, Rig Veda is considered to be the oldest one. It's the lineage which is the source of all the Vedic tradition and Vedic knowledge. So the Brahmins, which are from Rig Vedic lineage, have this totality of the understanding of the laws of the nature, how the nature functions, and how the other sounds, which are structured in other Vedas, which are the other three Vedas, Sam Veda, Atharva Veda, and Yajur Veda, are decoded. So the mantra purusha values, so something which is encoded within the mantras, which is much more prominent in Rig Veda, which percolates down to the other three. So in other words, you can understand that this is the most subjective of all the Vedas, and it becomes more and more objective as we go down to the other Vedas and the Upavedas.
Yeah, beautiful. And Upavedas, just for those, are like the sub-Vedas.
They are the subcategories of Vedas, but they are more understandable. Like when you talk about Ayurveda, it is action items, what to do, what to eat, when to sleep, things like that. Same with Dhanurveda or the science of Sthapatya Veda, which is science of building and architecture, about the directions, where to build the house, what are the coordinates, directions, those kind of things. So it becomes a little bit more of a life science, which is more applicable and objective and understandable in nature. But as you go back to the further subjective understanding of Rig Veda, which is everything is encoded within the mantra purusha or mantras itself, it is much more subjective. It is the seed value from where the tree originates.
Yeah, and I just want to, you know, clarify to people listening that all this knowledge, all the things that Dr. Suhas mentioned, the Ayurveda, which of course is the knowledge of the body and the life and the health, and then the Vedic architecture, it's the Majaveda, the Ayurvedic astrology, the Vedic astrology, all these things, they all come from this sound quality, this primordial sound quality, which is essentially embedded in the Rig Veda, which is the source one.
And this is the most ancient body of knowledge that is even known to humanity in any shape or form. And mm-hmm. we don't even like to put a tag of time to it. It is as immemorial as the time is. And the laws and things that are mentioned in the Rig Veda are free from the past, present, and future limitations in many ways. The vibratory quality, as you said, the primordial sound quality, is exactly meeting the vibrations with how the universe pulsates and how the energetic force of the universe is functioning so perfectly and so orderly.
Beautiful. And Some people say Ayurveda is 5,000 years old, but really it's not at all. It's as old as nature. And there's a beautiful saying. I'm not sure if it's a shloka. Maybe you can clarify, but it's, if you've heard it before, it says, just as a mother creates breast milk before the baby is born, similarly, nature provides the Ayurveda before humankind has manifested.
I think that was created before the humanity was created, because I think it was understood that this is what they will need to function.
So, Dr. Suhas, you've spent some time with the wonderful sage Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who many people may know, and if those who don't, he's famous for teaching the Beatles to meditate, and he really was essentially a sage who gathered and cultivated a large movement of people, and he's the one who basically spread the Ayurveda, the Stapachaveda, the Jyotish, the meditation and yoga to the West, and he gathered and cultivated a lot of basically a movement of Vaidyas or Ayurvedic doctors like yourself to spread this also. Can you tell us about your time with that?
Absolutely. I definitely consider His Holiness Maharishi Mahesh Yogi as a modern Renaissance person who brought the Vedic tradition back into the labs and the scientific laboratories and put the ancient wisdom to test with the marker, the benchmark of science, and literally tested all the applicability and the applications of yoga, Ayurveda, Jyotish, meditation, Sthapatya Veda, and 40 different branches of Vedic literature. So definitely, he single-handedly led the transformation that you and me are talking about today. It changed the consciousness, especially in the West. People were aware of many of these things back in India, but he literally shifted that awareness in the West and brought back respect to India and to Indians to help them understand the value of the things that they grew up with, because it was understood as a way of life, and many people in rural parts in India and even modern urban India didn't care a whole lot about it. And now when it is scientifically tested and validated, it has brought much more respect and appreciation. So he kind of changed the situations in both different parts of hemisphere, in the East as well as West. Having worked with him closely for so many years and worked with some eminent doctors, including Dr. Raju, in Flow Drop, and having lived and worked with Maharishi for so many years, I think it is a fascinating experience. It has really helped me understand the total synthesis. Even though I went to school, I did my MD and PhD in Ayurvedic internal medicine, but it was more like a different kind of silo that I was practicing and learning about Ayurveda. But it was Maharishi who helped me understand the application of Jyotish in Ayurveda and create different courses, classes, curriculum on medical astrology. We used to do consultations with a sthapati, with a Jyotishi, with a Vaidya, all together with a modern medical doctor. And it kind of opened a complete different window in my own mind and psyche to allow the importance of these sciences and the application for day-to-day living. He made me travel all around the globe. I literally lived and worked in 39 different countries all around the world. And what it did was it helped me really understand that the underlying humanity is the same. It may look differently in different parts of the world, but the human needs, the human values, the way the human mind works is more or less the same. And applying the principles of Ayurveda, no matter where you live, is simply very easy and very applicable and understandable. So I think it was a very, very enriching experience for me. It has transformed my individual life. My wife, who is also an Ayurvedic doctor, Dr. Manisha, and inspired my son to also become an Ayurvedic doctor himself. So slowly and steadily, it has created a much more reverence and understanding for these sciences, which we are able to apply and talk about it, design courses, classes, curriculum, write books, and more importantly, make it as a mission and purpose for our life.
Beautiful. We'll go into soon about integrating Jyotish Vedic astrology with the Ayurveda, which as you as a physician does. But before that, I want to just go about, yeah, how is it like? I mean, you brought up in India and learning Ayurveda in India. And me also, I see this, I spend a lot of time at, my guru's clinic, the Rajag Family Clinic in Hyderabad. And you know, there they have so many resources and we can treat the patients with all these resources and these herbs. And then we come to the West and you're just integrating and making Ayurveda available in the West. And, you know, we don't have access to all these herbs and the labor, we don't have access to all these laborious processes of making the herbs and the weather. And so how have you found bringing Ayurveda to the West?
And this is exactly the discussion that we used to have within the Maharshi movement, because when we were going from Ukraine to Russia to Lebanon to Brazil, we always were concerned that we used to have so many things in our arsenal, if I may say, to use. And here we are traveling without anything. And that's when I really learned the value of diet and lifestyle, is what to do and what not to do is so important that sometimes the herbs and the herbal formulation become secondary. And this first line becomes even more effective for people to understand what they do and how they are doing at times and change that. And if it is coupled with some simple spices, most of the time we had nothing but some cooking spices, and we used to create blends of these powders or mixtures or herbal teas along with some diet and lifestyle changes. And we have had, I would say, even greater success of using that with do's and don'ts and some simple spices than everything that we could use back in India. So it again gave me an understanding of Ayurveda as a science of life, that how practical and how valuable it is. You don't need to have everything. You don't need to have all the exotic herbs from across the seven seas to use it all the time. If it is good, that is perfectly fine. But whatever the local resources are, you can decode understanding the rasa, guna, virya, vipaka, which are the taste, the medicinal potencies, the effect, the therapeutic effect. And you can use very much those what are available and integrate them with your Ayurvedic understanding, no matter which country and which part of the world you're practicing.
Exactly. And that's called yukti, and using what you have available. And that's the essence of Ayurveda. It's not, you know, going to these herbs or these seasons. In India, there's six seasons. It's according to what you are, what habitat you are, what climate, what age, all these things.
It makes you flexible. It makes you flexible. It makes you diligent. It makes you more intelligent from a prescription-based practice to a holistic understanding of one's life and creating a template which is very, very specific for that given person at that given moment of imbalance. And that education that comes with it, that helps person understand that when they were doing this, this is what they were having. And by not doing this, how do they feel? I mean, sometimes I jokingly say that an Ayurvedic practice is very easy, because first half of my session, I listen to people what they do. And the second half, I tell them not to do that.
Yeah.
And so
It's a good formula to just listen, right?
The concept of patya is the concept of do's and don'ts, and many times the emotional health and well-being, which is at the backdrop of everything. And that's how and why I actually integrate medical astrology in there, because the psycho-emotional response to even a poor lifestyle is coming from why they are stressed out or what they are unhappy about.
So you see the Vedic astrology as a very strong influence in people's emotional and mental state?
It does. It gives you a clear idea what the good and bad time they're going through and why they're creating or making those choices, which is making them either sick or healthy.
I mean, in Ayurveda, it talks about the qualities of a Veda or an Ayurvedic physician, and it's Daksha Shastra Dushtakama Suchi. And Shastra, the second one, is knowledge of all the Shastras, all the texts, and not just the Ayurveda, is that right? It also includes astrology and even economy.
All the allied Vedic sciences, not only understanding of that, but the application of that. So in the olden days, the Vaidya and Jyotishi used to be the one and the same person. The Jyotishi used to be the Vaidya, the Vaidya used to be Jyotishi. Everybody knew about the Vedic calendar and the lunar days, as we talk about, means you are in a different time zone as we speak today. But every time I start the day, I know where the moon is in Sagittarius today and what to expect with the clients. And even when I feel the pulse, I have to keep that mind that moon is in a fiery sign today, and it might have influence on the imbalance of that element in the body itself or in the mind.
Wow, that is fascinating. That's really beautiful, because that, I guess, is more accessible for practitioners to learn, rather than being even more specific about learning about the patient's exact specific chart, but just having a general knowledge of the current Jyotish state every day. That's really beautiful. Dr. Suhas, will you tell us
another point to clarify is being aware is one of the most important quality of a Vaidya. Being aware of so many things that is going on in that person's life, and to really prioritize and understand what bugs them the most and how to integrate that into the therapeutic model that you're creating for them. Because many times we think that this is someone else's domain. I don't have to deal with this. I have to just talk about their heartburn today and not worry about them losing their job. Or I have to fix their migraine and not worry about their difficult relationship that they're going through. But being aware simply allows them to really understand where the shoe is pinching exactly, and how can you integrate that to soften the edge from that challenge that that person is having, and not only do it with herbs or herbal formulation, but with an effective counseling. And a good Vaidya is an effective communicator, a Vaidya who commands respect and develops a rapport between the patient or the healer and the healee, because the process of healing doesn't even start if you don't start trusting each other's ability.
Yeah, and a lot of it, that's so true. And I learned that, always to ask the patient, like, what's your job and what's your family life and all this, because a lot of the times those can be highly influential, right?
And that's exactly about 70-80% of the challenge that the person is having. It might look as if a stress-induced autoimmune condition or this or that, but from an Ayurvedic perspective, it is the Adhi and the Vyadhi blended together. Adhi is psycho-emotional imbalances that is going on in the backdrop before it manifests as a physical disease or a symptom. And if you pay attention to the Ayurvedic chikitsa, as we say, the treatment protocols, the 2/3 of the Ayurvedic chikitsa is like this. So when we talk about Daiva Vyapashre, Yukti Vyapashre, and Sattva Vajay Chikitsa, Daiva Vyapashre is trying to understand the hand of destiny, the grand scheme of things, why certain things are happening in a certain way, to decode and understand that in the grand scheme of things. Sattva Vijay Chikitsa is to boost one's moral strength, willpower, and discipline so that they can stay away from bad choices and stay on the right track of doing the right thing for themselves. And the third part is Yukti Vyapashre, where you integrate so many things, including herbs and diet and lifestyle and panchakarma and so forth and so on. But 2/3 of the treatment is based upon this sciences, which brings Jyotish, Ayurveda, yoga, meditation, all blended together to understand the human mind and to help them transcend the illusory veil of Maya and find their spiritual self, from where the intensity of these challenges become much less.
And this illusion, which Dr. Suhas was referring to, is really the foundation, the basis of all disease. I mean, in Ayurveda, they say there's one cause of every single disease, and that's called prajnaparada, which means mistake of intellect, your intellect mistaking yourself for what you truly are.
Maharshi used to say health is a byproduct of enlightenment. And the purpose of any Ayurvedic session is to enlighten them to the best of our ability and put them onto a spiritual evolution path so that they're much more closer to their greater self. And from there, they're able to manage their not only buddhi, but the mind, the karmendriya, the motor organ, the gyanendriya, which are the sensory organs. So your job becomes rather easy by doing that instead of trying to do an objective-based therapy.
Totally. It's like when I see a patient who isn't meditating, and I'm like, oh, fantastic. You're just about to have the biggest boost in your health because you're going to tap into your true self, which is, and I really liked how you said the word manage. When you tap in, you know, when you align with your true self, you can manage your body essentially and your mind, because it's not necessarily, you know, you're never going to have a perfect body, you're never going to have a perfect digestion, skin. But when you're identified with your true sense of self and that absolute state of consciousness, then, you know, you're identifying as the universe. Nothing can make or break you. Even if you have a, you know, pinched lumbar nerve in your spine, like, you're identifying with totality. That's just a little body on a little ball going around this little sun in this little galaxy. So amazing. And will you, let's go into like more specifically with the Vedic counseling, because, and me personally, like going in a clinic in India a lot of the time and, you know, seeing so many patients a day with very short amount of time, there's not a lot of that. And also because of the India, of having to learn more to counsel in the West, because in India, unfortunately, it's more turning into, like, I guess, a Western medical system here, yes, where, you know, the patients is. Just and come.
They're using Ayurvedic formulation more so than drugs.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And it's, so yeah, it's, I personally want to learn more about counseling for myself as a practitioner, because, you know, I'm having to do it more, and I'm the kind of person, and it's still, you know, is definitely important to give the herbs and the treatments, which, you know, we can just, and I like that about Ayurveda, that we can just treat the body a lot of the time, like just lie on my table and I'll pour some oils on your head or, and your body, whatever it is. And that will help a lot, the nervous system. But definitely counseling is very important, especially for conditions like depression and suicide and those deep tamasic conditions, or those, you know, in conditions of inertia and darkness. So I think, yeah, if you could enlighten us on some ways. Not
have you seen my book on the art and science of Vedic counseling yet?
I saw it, but I have not read it. I only realized you made it recently.
Because that's the total integration of yoga, Ayurveda, Jyotish, and other allied Vedic sciences. So the modern day Vedic counseling, which an Ayurvedic practitioner definitely is about life encompassing spiritual guidance. And it's a new paradigm that we're trying to create. So it's a Vedic approach to spiritual freedom and abundance that allow you to empower the clients for a lot of optimistic situations in their life. Because the paradigm that is evolving everywhere, and Australia is no different, is wellness. It's a new age medicine. It is consciousness-based. It's all about green revolution, organic living, sustainable living. It has to totally circle the whole life, because what we see, and I teach a lot of physicians around the country, around the globe, actually, and I see that people talk about a disease, but the real cause of the disease comes from stress, financial distress, relationship, job, addictions, some personality challenges, the emotional burden that they carry, lack of life purpose, or time constraint and busyness of the high pace of life. This is the main cause that we see in America. And until and unless I address all of those issues one by one, I can't go very far from helping people to take care of their health. And the mental health statistics is really alarming, because I don't even want to go there and give you the statistics, which is very depressing at times, because a lot of conditioning in the mind happens way too early. The parenting skills, the lack of family unit, the material and the luxurious needs and the social norms, that the social conditioning that we are imprinting on ourselves and our kids, lack of role models, all of those are some of the challenges that people are suffering from. And as we embark on using yoga, Ayurveda, Vedanta as a model for Vedic counseling, then understanding your own self, understanding the mother nature, the laws of nature, how the universe functions, and all the self-realization tools are at your disposal. We talk about yoga, Ayurveda, mantra, meditation, pranayama, breath work, panchakarma, diet, exercise, Vedic laws of right living, vastu, jyotish, Gandharva Veda, spending time outdoors, nature, forest bathing, silence, sensory regulation, withdrawal, satsang, bhakti yoga, community practices, selfless seva, all of those things become so powerful tool that you would be excited to use and select what is the most necessary given here for this given person that I can emphasize and take them on a ride for the next 3 months, 6 months, maybe a year. And a year later, you compare yourself how far you have come, and you won't believe how your life has changed.
Wonderful. And this is like revolutionary, because in traditions, not only the Vedic tradition, but all these, you know, shamanic traditions and all the traditional cultures, there the counselor would be have that kind of role as, you know, the guru or the teacher or the priest or the Vaidya, as you mentioned, the physician. So in every, whether it's a village or community, these are the aspects they provide. And it's funny, I've met a few I've friends with some psychologists who, you know, learnt the traditional psychology, the traditional Western method, I mean, and then they learnt the meditation later, and they're like, oh my God, what I learnt was not so good. And the knowledge that I have now, which I can give to them according to the laws of nature and their Vedic knowledge, which they've learnt, is so much more profound.
And I think it's a two-way process, Dylan, that it helps you as a practitioner or a counselor become a better human being, because what you're telling them with your communication, with your sincerity, with your life coaching, with your awareness and transcending your own personal ego is helping you to overhear yourself telling others what to do, which slowly starts fixing some of your challenges and your limitations, because we all have our own imperfections, and we sometimes get clients which helps us bring that to our notice, and as we start fixing them, we slowly start fixing ourselves. So it's a very powerful two-way tool that creates almost a perfection of a healer, which sometimes I tell that the patients make you capable of helping them.
Beautiful. And I, that's something that just as I'm feeling while you're speaking about this, is how important it is and to maintain this quality of suchi or purity as the physician.
And I appreciate that word, because that purity is so important, because the qualities of counselor, it takes further notches, because using Jyotish, the whole, you're looking at the universe, you're looking at the Brahmanda, you're looking at the cosmos. So you have to be daksha, you have to be attentive of everything that is going on. You have to be able to understand the mantric quality of every word, which could be completely different than what it literally means. So the phonetic quality of each sound, each sutra that you read and understand could be completely different. Drishtakarma, Shuchi, Aneka Hora Tattvadnya, where understanding the logic behind everything. Uhapohopatu, how to refine and define your ability to communicate effectively with people. Having Siddha Mantra, and that is something which Maharshi used to love to talk about. He used to say, Siddha Vaidyastu Mantrikaha. A Siddha Vaidya is like a mantrikaha. So you may say the same thing, but the way you say it would register in the person so deeply that would work as a mantra. It could be same simple thing as drink hot water or take Trifala 2 at bedtime, but these words coming from the depth of your own conviction and understanding and the purity has a mantra-like benefit. And to take it further, anything that you touch and hold in your hand while you're mixing concoctions, powder, blending, preparing medicines or anything, your consciousness has the ability to change the energy within the matter. Let me repeat this. Your consciousness should have the ability to change the energy within the matter, where the matter assumes complete different qualities given to the same person. So I can give Trifala to one person to help them sleep better. I can give the same Trifala to someone else to have a decent bowel movements. I can give Trifala to help lower blood sugar. I can give same Trifala to help someone lose weight. Or I can give Trifala to have someone calm their anxiety. Because the way I'm using this herb, I'm changing the energy, how it is going to affect that person. And if a Siddha Vaidya has the ability or the capacity with their purity of lifestyle to do that, I think that's where it attains a complete different dimension.
It's absolutely beautiful. And for you listening, I really want to emphasize what Dr. Suhas is saying is completely true. And I've seen it definitely and felt it also in treatment, receiving treatment myself. That's the capability of the consciousness and this person, how they make it. And we know, you know, if we have, same with food, simply like that's why mum's food's the best food and wife cooked to have, even if you eat it at a 5-star restaurant, but the kitchen is full of stress and like most of them are, it's not nourishing, it's actually damaging. So it's so important.
And those qualities, ability to change those. And that takes the medicine to a complete different level altogether.
Totally. And I'm fortunate to, you know, as you know, the family that are my teachers, that's really like a very strong focus of them and why, I guess, what makes their medicines very unique and how they also like that, what's, they value that in their medicines themselves. Like that's the one of the most important parts is how they prepare it and the mantras they use. And then when they give it, and not only you mentioned the siddha capability of speech, but also then the hand, what is it called? It's called Hasta Vasi, is it?
Jitta Hasta, where there's more success as a healer's hand, I would say, that whatever you touch becomes the ability to heal. And it is given a lot of importance. Actually, it's from Rig Veda itself that it talks about that your Hasta is what creates healing. Mm. Where you touch, how you touch. And you can impart that healing while you're feeling the pulse or while you're touching the person or the patient itself or while you're preparing medicine. So I think this whole science of energetics of the person, of the healer and the healing, which creates Shuddha Chikitsa, the purity of the Chikitsa, and that quality of material quality, monetary quality comes secondary. But this tremendous compassion and the zeal to help each other, and especially help them during the most distressed times of their life when they're sick or troubled or tired or exhausted, is the time when you build that bridge and allows yourself to make that happen. So another important thing that I often see when I'm talking about counseling is creating that sadhana. Sadhana, so that what you do, your ability to meditate yourself, your ability to exercise, your ability to eat clean, purer foods, to get good night rest, to do your puja, to do your rituals, so that you become a stronger magnet in this reaction. So that your touch is helping those demagnetized patients to get charged one more time. But if you become devitalized, if you have an impure lifestyle, if you are feeling tired yourself, then your ability to impart that healing becomes weak. So it's doubly important to walk our talk and engage into our own sadhana and practice, I would say.
So important. Thanks for that. And, you know, when a lot of people ask me about learning Ayurveda, and it's a hard thing to recommend these days, but one, the programs that we offer at the clinic in my teacher's clinic is not so much intellectual knowledge. It's called Diksha or Dhanvantri Diksha, and it's practicing all these things and really maintaining the utmost purity during these 41 days. And then you're essentially cultivating this capability. And this is what Suhas has been talking about. Siddha means capability. And then you can, you know, do these miraculous, these wonderful healings. Okay, so as most people listening are not practitioners, and as you mentioned, the statistics of, you know, mental health are very detriment, you know, very uninspiring, and perhaps not even wanting to mention it, but they're very strong, especially now is very much increasing in the younger ages, even between like teenagehood and the early 20s. A lot, I would say, is due to the social media and also just the blue light, looking at the screens at nighttime, altering the hormones. So what, as you know, I guess also addressing those people who are experiencing those deep stages of depression, but also what can we do to help our fellow friends or family who is experiencing this? Because really, I think counseling is one of the most important things, especially when they're in that deep depression. You know, we can even give herbs and things, but really the counseling is so really what's needed to bring them out of that deep state.
I fully agree. And there is so much diversity in how you talk to parents, because the early childhood experience is one of the main challenge that I face in my practice, because half of all chronic mental illness begins by the age of 14. It is the second leading cause of death globally between the age 15 and 24. Okay? Second leading cause of death between the age 15 and 24. Third leading cause of death between the age 10 and 24. Suicide is 10th leading cause of death in the United States. So these are not good statistics, especially for developed countries. And it should start early at an embryological level when you are planning to start a family, when to do it, how to do it, how to counsel them for an ideal parenting situation, how to create healthy, happy relationship, how to change their outlook regarding their material needs, focus on education, focus on the basic necessities of life. That is very important. And secondly, when it comes to health and wellness and clean, purer food, because we all know from an Ayurvedic standards is what you see is what you become. What you eat is what you become. So taking care of the sensory regulations, the video games and the violent movies and various different foods that are empty calories, that are loaded with impurities and toxins and do not provide optimum nutrition to the kids, is the root cause of the problem. So if at all we can fix that for the first 10, 15 years, I think we should slow down this epidemic very quickly.
And then when they have it, you know, when they're experiencing it, what can we do?
Well, and when they have it, again, it is there are tools like mantra or yoga or meditation or creating a support system or satsanga or bhakti yoga or creating tools which takes time and efforts. And that's where the challenge with the medicine is, that you just want to compartmentalize them, put them into a bracket and send them from one place to the other place, and easy to label them psychiatric or psychotic or neurotic. But there are shades of imbalances that can progress and can be shoved into the carpet rather too early because of medications. So I think making sure that we select the right kind of Medhi Rasayanas, the right kind of foods, the right kind of tonics, lifestyle, using various things like physical movement, activities, sports, breathing exercise, even sleep has such a profound impact. So I think these are not new tools as such. We have known about this for ages together. But what has happened is the pace of life itself has become so fast that no matter how we want to go to bed at proper time, many people can't, and they are working around the clock. So the busyness is taking away your happiness.
And you wrote a whole book on that, on circadian
rhythm. I did, and it became bestseller and got translated in 13 different countries, where it talked about sleep and the impact of the blue light. It talked about the whole adjustment that you are paid according to the time that you put in. So you are becoming more scarcer with the time than the money that you care about. So this is a challenge that many people are facing, and I think a conscious slowdown from that aspect is really necessary, especially where I practice in Bay Area is so difficult. And the latest discovery of the clock genes, which highlights the importance of Ayurvedic Dinacharya and Ratricharya and Ritucharya, which are daily routine and nightly routine and the seasonal routines. It is a perfect template to understand and synchronize your circadian rhythms of light and darkness right to the cellular level itself. And our bodies, our cells, our tissues are like time machines, which can really sense this. And even the current epidemic that we're talking about is trapping us exactly at the change of season, when the Mother Nature is going through a shift. And as the global warming is creating the intensities of this transition even more profound and more strong, it catches us off guard. And this is exactly where the biological timing and doing the right thing at the right time is so important that Ayurveda has always talked about.
Mm. And also you said related with the current pandemic we're facing, because I'll just say, I don't like to say the name, but I'll just say coronavirus because this podcast might be released later. But as you said, it's also what one thing I've thought is it's slowing people down. And really reassessing, are we as humans meant to be doing this, like working 9 to 5, and is this sustainable?
No, and nature has its own way to remind us. In Ayurveda, there's a whole section on Janapada Udvansa Vyadhis, where it talks about these kind of epidemics and pandemics that suddenly catches hold of you and makes you realize. And I jokingly tell my patients, if you don't have time for anything else, you will find time to get sick. And the busyness, sometimes it goes so overboard and you become so disconnected with your body and bodily rhythms and functioning and the needs that you are forced to slow down. I tell them, for a fast-acting relief, try slowing down. And this is one way of nature drink telling us to slow down in some way. So I think the current situation, as we look, it's a part of the collective consciousness that we were into for I would say last decade or so. Mm-hmm. And why I would say last decade, because 2004 there was no Facebook, 2005 there was no Twitter, 2006 the Apple smartphone came in 2007. There was no smartphone at 2006. So in last 10 years, everything has gone to a maddening pace, and there was no reprieve that we were pushing ourselves. And I think it's one way where it's a speed breaker to slow down, where we are allowing to understand the value of humanity, to take care of each other, and to go back to our basic bodily needs, that what we need in order to survive and be happy. So it is differently said in Ayurveda from the Vimamsara of Charak Samhita that it talks about, that it's some form of adharma. Adharma doesn't mean that you did something criminal, but dharma means not doing the right thing. So if you're doing the right thing, and adharma is something where you're not doing the right thing at the right time. So that is a disconnection between the space and the time. And even Acharya Rasayana actually talks about it. So in so many Ayurvedic literatures, it has talked about it. And the nature with extreme weather patterns is the first way that the Mother Nature resets some of these things.
Mm. Yeah, because when I'm reading about Janapada Svamsa, which is the epidemics that Ayurveda talks about, from what I've read, and definitely not nearly as much as what you've read, but it's mainly with the environment.
But the environment is the impact of the collective consciousness of the humanity that we are living on this planet Earth itself.
Yeah.
Because the environment is a mere reflection of who we are inside. We call it as environmental calamities, but these are all related with the internal state of human being, how one's mind and body is functioning and behaving itself. And there are numerous examples of that kind that are given when you start decoding understanding of the imbalances that can happen in the air or the water, in the land, in the season, that they have talked about, that what and when it will create fatal proportions as such, or even the changes in the quality of the foods that are grown in different parts of the planet itself. And we're already seeing those. So when we talk about inflammation as an epidemic, we are talking about internal global warming. So there's a definite correlation between what is happening inside that is affecting the environment outside.
Beautiful. Really appreciate your insights and your realizations, and very fascinating, especially correlating this past 12 or so years with the introduction of smartphones and fast pacing all this. Have you, as a Jyotish, as a Vedic astrologer, have you you know, seen the cosmic weather align with what's happened in the past? Well,
we can see the pattern. They are not exactly seen as one planet in this zodiac sign or this planet in the other zodiac sign or the transit, but collectively, it doesn't really look pretty healthy right now in the cosmos. So there are lots of situations which are challenging, which are affecting on a global scale, on a political scale, for mass events that are happening around the globe itself. So we can see that, but this is way beyond even the scope of Jyotish sometimes to actually see that how everybody's chart can be so quickly affected by something like this at one time.
Wonderful. So, okay, Dr. Suhas, what is your plans and your motives right now, or what are you passionate about in the near future?
Well, I think from personally, as I said, that I have been an Ayurvedic practitioner for over 30 years now, and looking at the trends, looking at what is going on with my practice is to create an educational-based protocol to help with my clients through one-on-one interactions, through the courses and the classes that I teach and the books that I write, while I continue to do my own inner practices to create a deepening of the understanding of the sciences, because everything that I practice between yoga, Ayurveda, Jyotish, everything else, it can take a lifetime to perfect those things and carve out some time to allow myself to really understand and decode these things and to bring it out and create simple templates to offer it to my patients and students alike. But what is my personal goal is to really see and structure the education and the application of Ayurveda as a form of pure medicine that can be practiced and preached and taught around the globe. And it can be a little bit more different in the form of Vedic counseling, more so than just as a medical therapeutic practice with some do's and don'ts and restrictions. And talking to people as one-on-one, like friends, and training people to really understand the length and breadth of human emotions and why people think this way and how that can be influenced and how that can be changed. A lot of things to do, a lot of things that I feel very excited about and passionate about. But at the end of the day, you have to do all at once. You have to be a good Ayurvedic practitioner. You have to be a good father, maybe a good husband, maybe a good son to your parents, maybe a good friend to your friends, maybe a good colleague to people that you're working with. It's an overall practice that has to be organic in all areas of life. There's nothing different that you have to play a different role in different areas or do only one thing at a time. It has to be all at once. That's how nature works, and that's how it should be.
Beautiful. Wonderful, yeah. Really integrating that in to the system and making it normal and acceptable, and making people realize and their awareness that this is so important. And yeah, I think it's definitely, as you said, a lot of work to do to make professionals and essentially, more importantly, the collective appreciate the importance of mental, you know, emotional health, mental health, spiritual. Dr. Suhas, will you tell us, mainly for me, but I'm sure many of my listeners would love to hear about, I don't know about your time with Dr. Raju, Dr. J.R. Raju.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so I've worked and lived with Dr. Raju for many years, and I have seen little Pawni and Harsha and Aditya grow in front of our eyes for many years in Holland. And Dr. Raju is and was a master in his art. And I think what Maharshi had tasked us at those times was to really create a template of education that can be taken out. So while we were designing the 16-hour educational courses on pulse diagnosis, on diet and digestion and nutrition, and prevention of different kinds, and really going back to the Ayurvedic literature and trying to understand few things that are so important and so relevant that can be integrated everything. I have seen him and his family very, very closely, how he inspired his own kids to be on this path. And it's not just the vocation that you create, is the passion that you infuse in yourself. And he was an ever-smiling gentleman that I still have very fond memories of always, and he is still. So I think that that is very, very important. I mean, he used to be super busy with seeing so many patients all day long, but morning till evening, he never had lost his smile from his wonderful, beautiful face, and the twinkle in his eyes that was there from 8 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock in the evening. So I think these are the things that you know that the person is in his dharma, in his doing the right things at the right time. And that's what they are passionate about. And that's what creates an interesting thing where you can inspire so many people just by being who you are.
Hmm. That's exactly what I see with them, is just their number one thing to care about is dharma. And even when you read about the epics, the, you know, I guess Hindu epics, if you want to call them, like the Mahabharata, the Great War, and the Ramayana, it's the such a key thing is dharma. You know, you say your word, you stick to it. Whatever's the most evolutionary thing to be doing right now, you do that, and that's of the utmost importance. How would you recommend that people, kind of different topic now, but like tune into their dharma? Because Ayurveda says also the most important things, or maybe it's the four things, it's of course it's dharma, atma, moksha, but there's something else.
Dharma, artha, kama. Those are the four things that are your health depends upon: doing the right thing at the right time, having a refined connection with money, wealth, finances, enjoying everything that you want to enjoy, life in a balanced way, fulfilling your karma and desires, and never lose the sight towards enlightenment and towards spirituality. So during all these phases and stages in life that you want to pursue on the track of growth and evolution and enlightenment. And it's something beautiful. And the most important requisite to do that is being aware. So I think being aware is important. So the three things that I tell my patients regularly through my books and classes and lectures is: ask yourself a question every day. At the end of the day, as you're about to hit your head to the pillow and close your eyes and get a good night's sleep, is what did you do for your mind today that made it happy, relaxed, cheerful, or joyful? What did you do for your body that made your body felt healthy and happy? You ate good food, nutrition, exercise, you went for a walk, saw the sunrise, sunset, whatever it is. And then spirit, what did you do throughout the day that gave you the glimpse of your spiritual self? Were you able to meditate? Were you able to do any puja or a ritual or transcend for a few minutes? Or did something that made a difference in someone else's life to attract better karma in your life? And if you are positively answering these three questions every night, you're on the right path. And the three pillars of health is definitely diet, sleep, and exercise. There's enough research to talk about and validate those things. And this is your full-time responsibility: to feed yourself with good quality food, to exercise and keep all the moving parts moving properly, and to get a good quality rest through meditation and through sleep at the right time, in the right amount. And if you're able to do that, I think the rest, everything will follow. Your full-time job is to take care of yourself, and more importantly, create an understanding and awareness of paying attention to the signals of the body that it is trying to tell you, and be kind enough to follow it to the best of your ability, and not take yourselves too seriously. And make it fun, make it simple, make it easy, make it as a way of living and thinking and behaving this way. It's not because you are doing it because I told you to do so. It is something that should become your second nature. And I think that is a better way to boost your immunity. That is a better way to create prevention. That is a better way to go through the quagmire of life without going up and down and swayed right and left too far. You can come back to the center rather quickly by having a stable mind and stable intellect.
Beautiful. Yeah. Owning it, not because we told you to. I love that. I just want to ask, you mentioned, I'm just curious to hear your view as a Rig Vedic Brahmin and also, of course, a master of Ayurveda who's done this for so many years. You mentioned the three pillars of the health, the Traya Upasthamba. It's Ahara, sleep, Nidra, sorry, Ahara, food, Nidra, sleep. And the third one's Brahmacharya, which is commonly misunderstood. And you kind of just abbreviated that as exercise. And of course, there's more to it. But would you
I did mention that as exercise, because that is a part, an important part of your physical movement and exercise, which are tested by science. I removed Brahmacharya in there because that is a step that will happen a bit later, once they are a little bit more aware of their body with the basics of living that you need to be doing. Because healthy body is the first tool towards enlightenment. Arogya is the mula for anything that you want to pursue in life. Brahmacharya is not celibacy. Brahmacharya is defined as Brahmam Acharati Yasa Brahmachari. So knowing Brahman and having an understanding of your greater self and living your life that way is a Brahmachari. It has nothing to do with only sexual activity or celibacy as such. So that aspect of your life will come a little bit later once you are physically healthy and free from diseases.
Beautiful. Okay, thank you, Dr. Suhas. Is there anything else you want to mention or share with the audience?
Well, I think this is excellent. And a couple of things that I have mentioned in my book, The Hot Belly Diet, that was the first one that was all about Agni and Ama. And one of the tagline of the book was Rekindle Your Fire and Rekindle Your Life. And it's available everywhere on Amazon or Kindle or any other bookstores. The second book that I wrote with HarperCollins was Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life, was more about the busyness of life and what can you do to improve your ability to sleep, unwind, and reset the rhythm. It's not what you eat, but when you eat. It's not how much sleep you get, but when you sleep. It's not how much exercise you get, but when you exercise. So when of all of that is all about hardwired, inflexible biology, which is called as chronobiology. So an excellent book, Change Your Schedule, Change Your Life. And the last one that we described was The Art and Science of Vedic Counseling that I wrote with Pandit Vamdev Shastri, David Frawley. It's an excellent book for all the Ayurvedic and yoga practitioners to integrate form of Vedanta and Vedic counseling into their Ayurvedic counseling practice. So I would want you to go and take a look at some of these books. You can always find more information about my practice and my services at ayurvedichealing.net. And we'll be happy to continue our discussion with you, Dylan, as the time permits, because I enjoyed our discussion quite a bit. And I'm so proud and happy with the work that you are doing. You are absolutely in sync with who you are, what you think, and what you do. And that's the first giant step toward spiritual growth and evolution. The rest, everything will fall in the right place. So I wish you a great success and abundance in every areas of life. All the best. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. Thank you, Dr. Suhas. Jai Gurudev.
Jai Gurudev. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. How beautiful, how serenading. What a pure man, and what a man with good intention. Once again, if you appreciate this content, please share it. Please support the show. You know, this show is all put on for free and cost money and cost energy and time. So you can support the show by rating the show and reviewing it. And, you know, take the action to do it yourself. Don't rely on other people. You'll get the benefit, believe me. And share it. Share it on Instagram. Share a screenshot. Leave a review. I love hearing it. And, you know, you can tag me and Dr. Suhas. That's Dr. Suhashi, like Dr. Suhashi. If you're interested in a similar podcast where I interview a couple of Vedas, a couple of Ayurvedic physicians, that's with Dr. Harsha and Dr. Pavani Raju, who Dr. Suhas was talking about. He saw them grow up. And that's episode 24, Authentic Ayurveda, Innocence and Purity for Maximum Healing. So check that out if you want something similar. More of this stuff coming as we get more into the traditional Ayurvedic knowledge. But check out the blog, check out the newsletter, the Instagram, and I'll see you next time. Thank you for listening. Much love.